C1AN. Number 7B.
Let me quickly go through them. I just see that I have too many notes. In spiritualism, the first was the woman said, I must accept and admit the ultimate perfection right from the beginning. Animal magnetism says, right from the beginning you must go out from something next to God, from the basis outside of God. The second was, in spiritualism, that the woman must have the strength of denying the erroneous postulates, those erroneous postulates. Here in animal magnetism, it's the negation of the spiritual qualities, a mere negation. It's denying truth instead of denying error. In animal magnetism, the woman is the sinlessness which can resist temptation. Here the serpent in the third is that which uses sin intentionally. Just the opposite, see. In the fourth, in spiritualism, we saw the woman quality which has that impersonality to let principle alone govern a situation. Here in animal magnetism, the serpent comes in and says, I have many categories of animal magnetism which I all set into operation. The intentional ignorant animal magnetism, malicious animal magnetism, voluntary and involuntary animal magnetism, just to counterfeit again. The fifth was in spiritualism, you remember, the woman quality which always expresses mercy and love and only wants to help and to save and to heal, whereas in animal magnetism a serpent is presented as that which wants to persecute and to harm and to belie. Then in the sixth we had in spiritualism the woman quality as that wholeness of a woman that has the courage to see a situation through to its end. Here comes the serpent in animal magnetism and says, why can't you justify a little bit of error? Why can't you leave error alone and see that there is something good about it too, and justify and not sentence it? And in the last subject in spiritualism, we had that woman quality which has the bigness. We said to have the bigness and greatness to harbor that way of salvation which is seen to be the only way of salvation, whereas the serpent comes in and wants to trespass on the divine order. And by trespasses on the divine order, wants to accomplish the sum total of evil. So you, if you have time once, just compare there those two wonderful aspects of the woman and the serpent. And be aware that the moment we want to lend ourselves to the womanhood of God, that the serpent must spring into action, must come to the front in order to be handled. In order to be handled, because the danger has to be seen and must be made void. Yes, I have just to choose out of many wonderful things. But one thing I just can't leave out is something very nice. And that is this. I want to bring... show you an illustration in the Bible for the chapter on animal magnetism, because I always feel that if we find an illustration of the Bible which in the Bible language says treats the subject, and we see some correlation, we get strengthened to see that the subject we are considering is an old new subject. Now perhaps one or the other has read Gordon Brown's book From Genesis to Revelation. And in that book full of vision and far and wide vision, he also deals with the prophets, the four big and the 12 minor prophets. And with his spiritual sense, he has ordered those 12 minor prophets by showing them that they are in the order, the first three showing the Word as the Word, Christ as the Word, Christianity as the Word, and then goes on in the matrix. And when I was doing the chapter on animal magnetism, which is in the tone of the Christ, was the Word. I was wondering what Gordon Brown has there. And the prophet which is under the Christ as the Word, as this chapter, is the prophet Joel. Now the prophet Joel is a perfect pet for animal magnetism. And so I want to show, because Gordon didn't have time at that time, and in that book it would have got a book of thousands and thousands of pages if he would have shown that. So I want to show at this one incident or illustration how exactly the prophet Joel has dealt with the question of animal magnetism in his time, naturally, at his level, with his language and with his illustration. But if we find the tones, we are amazed at the exactness of correlation between those two. Animal magnetism, the chapter, I compare here with Joel. Joel means Yahweh. Is that Yahweh? Yahweh is God. Yahweh is God. As animal magnetism says, animal magnetism is the God. That's the power. Well, animal magnetism starts with animal magnetism, with the animals, and shows that it is a chapter that the animal are the gods and kings, and shows that animal magnetism, the first subject, have seeming power of evil, that they have violent effects which are observed in the public practice, that these effects of animal magnetism lead to moral and to physical death. You see, that they are a great army of evil, that they have power. And then Mrs. Eddy comes and says, but awake, that they are not real power, but they are just power of elusiveness. Well, Joel says the same thing in his language. He begins with these animals and the army of animals and shows what an army that is and what power these animals have and how they kill everything. That which the palmer worm has left has the locust eaten, and that which the locust have left, that has the canker worm eaten, and that which the canker worm has left, the caterpillar have eaten. You just see that army of evil power just creeping over the earth and bringing death to everything, as if it had power. And just as Mrs. Eddy said, awake and see that it is only an imagination. So Joel says, awake, ye drunkards. He says, well, you are drunkards. You don't see clearly. That's why you see this picture of the power of evil. Then we come to the second subject. In the second subject, in animal magnetism, Mrs. Eddy shows how animal magnetism is a mere negation, that it just negates, therefore, that animal magnetism has no substance and reality by itself, that it is just a negating spirit which just tears everything down, that it is an unreal concept, so to say. Therefore, that because it is a negation, it doesn't bring forth spirit fruits. And Joel says the same thing. He says, well, this army of animals don't bring forth fruit. They're just the contrary. They are negation. He says, and gives here a great picture of the fruitfulness, of the fruitlessness. Sorry, of the fruitlessness of animal magnetism. He says, lament, the field is wasted, the land mourneth, for the corn is wasted, and the new wine dried up, the oil languishes, for the harvest of the field is perished, the vine is withered, and the fig tree languishes, the pomegranate tree, the palm tree also, and the apple tree, even all the trees of the fields are withered. Is not the meat cut off before your eyes? The seeds rot under their clods. The garners are laid desolate. The barns are broken down. for the corn is withered. The herds of cattle have no pasture, yea, the flocks of sheep are made desolate. The fire has devoured the pastures of the wilderness, and the flame has burned all the tares of the field. The water brooks are dried up. Complete picture of the fruitlessness of animal magnetism, of what this army of evil seems to accomplish, a negation. Instead of bringing substance, it's negation. Then we come to the third subject, and in the third subject in the chapter Animal Magnetism, we get the aggressive feature of animal magnetism that comes to the front. How the looms of crime hidden in dark recesses of mortal thought are every hour weaving webs more complicated and subtle. So secret are the present modes of animal magnetism that they ensnare the age into indolence, and produce the very apathy on the subject which the criminal desires. You see, it implies the exercise of despotic control. It is as if she would show how animal magnetism just creeps into every pore, subtly and silently, and just gets at you. Well, Joel says the same thing. Joel gives the same picture of that secret power that cannot be restricted and just go through every pore, which just cannot be stopped. He says, blow the trumpet. We always know that the trumpet is the call of Zoe. Blow the trumpet in Zion and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh, for it is nigh at hand. A great people and a strong shall come. A fire devoureth them before. The land is as the garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. Yea, and none has escaped them. They run like mighty men. They climb the wall like men of war. And they march everyone his way, and they break not their ranks. Neither does one thrust another. They march everyone in his path, and they burst through the weapons, and break not off their course. They leap upon the city. They run upon the wall. They climb up into the houses. They enter into the window like a thief. You just can't see how this thing cannot be stopped. But through every pore, through every ranks, they just march on, nothing can hinder them. How that secret and animal magnetism just creeps in everywhere. But in the third tone, in the chapter on animal magnetism, I said that in the middle comes a break where Mrs. Eddy shows that mankind, she says, must learn that evil is not power, that Christian Science despoils the kingdom of evil and preeminently promotes affection and virtue, that through science we can escape from sin and mortality, which bless the whole you. See, in soul we get all the change, as always in the tone of soul as soul, the change from the Word to the Christ to the salvation. She says the salvation lies in handling evil scientifically. How can we handle evil scientifically? She says that go to the primeval existence, handle it from that point of view, go back to the reality of being. Well, Joel says the same thing in that tone of soul. He, after he has shown this army creeping in through every door like a thief, he breaks the tone exactly like Mrs. Eddy and says, yet, even now, says the Lord, turn ye unto me with all your heart. You see the turning, soul that exchanges. Turn ye, turn ye, turn ye unto me with all your heart, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with mourning, and rend your heart, and not your garments, and turn unto the Lord your God. For he is gracious and full of compassion, slow to anger and plenteous in mercy. Who knows whether he will not turn and repent and leave a blessing behind him? Spare my people, O Lord, and give not thine heritage to reproach, that the nations shall rule over them. See, quite exactly like Mrs. Eddy says, all right, there is a solution to that evil, to that malicious, silent, secret animal magnetism. That is to turn to the Lord, to learn what the Lord is, and if we take the stand of the Lord, may we not find mercy and grace, and no more a reproach. May we not find no more evil, if we turn. Well, if we turn, what says Mrs. Eddy in the fourth subject, if we turn? If we turn, then Mrs. Eddy takes the fourth subject and says, well, mind, science, is of God, and demonstrates the divine principle, working out the purpose of good only. When we turn and look at from God's point of view, instead of going out from the point of view outside of God, like Mesmer did, like any illusion does, then we find that principle works out the purpose of good only. She says the maximum of good is the infinite God and his idea, the all in all. That would be the answer. To turn and stand on God's point and look out from the throne of grace. Well, Joel says the same thing. Joel goes on and shows the very same thing. He says, then was the Lord jealous for his land. Principle is always jealous of his idea. And had pity on his people. And the Lord answered and said unto his people, behold, I will send you corn and wine and oil, and ye shall be satisfied therewith. Fear not, O land, be glad and rejoice, for the Lord has done great things. He has done the maximum of good. He has done great things. He has done the maximum of good. The pastures of the wilderness do spring, for the tree bears her fruit, the fig tree and the vine do yield their strength. He giveth you the former rain in just measures, and the floor shall be full of wheat, and the fats shall overflow with wine and oil, and I will restore to you the years that the locusts have eaten, the canker worm and the caterpillar and the palmer worm, my great army, which I sent among you, and ye shall eat in plenty and be satisfied. And ye shall know that I am in the midst, not outside, of Israel, and that I am the Lord your God, and there is none else, that the infinite God is the all in all. And Mrs. Eddy says in that force that the truths of immortal mind sustain men, and they annihilate the fables of mortal mind, just as he shows here that this principle will sustain men, that he gives all back what the locusts have eaten. That's what happens always. That's what happens always when we turn to principle and begin to see and look out from the standpoint of principle as the only one and as that which works out the maximum of good always and has always done that. That restores to us everything that seems to have been taken away from us through a belief. It is not so that animal magnetism can take away something from us, and that we have afterwards to go and restore it. We have to see that animal magnetism has never been able to take anything away from us. The moment we look out from principle and see that nothing has ever been going on and could never go on but principle working out its idea, we begin to realize that animal magnetism, that great army, has never been able to deprive us of anything. He sustains men, he is the midst in Israel, and he is the Lord your God, and there is none besides him. Wonderful. When he has shown that, you know, when we begin to see that all that is happening and working, that the only power that is ever going on in the universe is principle working out the maximum of good, then Mrs. Eddy can go on to the fifth subject, where we see, then Only that good flows from God to man. Then we come to true individuality, to true fatherhood, where the father takes care of the son. And as that flow goes on, we come to that fifth subject where we see, all right, and God is the only being and life there is. And in that being, she says, for there man can do no harm, for scientific thoughts are true thoughts passing from God to man. That's the sustenance of man. That we begin to see that from Adam on, since ever, God has always given us all what he has, and it's just up to now to acknowledge and to see that thing. Well, Joel says the very same thing, the very same thing, not a bit different. He says, and it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. Well, that's the way the Old Testament puts it. Again, that only there is one flow from God to man. That he pours out the Spirit upon all flesh. And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. You see, the inspiration of life comes to everyone. Your old men shall dream dreams. To dream dreams was to have vision and prophecy. Your young men shall see visions, and also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit. You see, there is just one fatherhood of the whole universe that gives one the right idea for to everyone, to the old and to the young, to the servant and to the master. In those days will I pour out my spirit, and it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be delivered. Wonderful. How he handles those canker worms and palm worms and so locusts. He just wipes them away and says, that army has no power. The Lord is power. The Lord is the one who goes over the land and who gives sustenance to the land and to its inhabitants, that inspires us and inspires us and inspires and pours really the Spirit on all flesh. Well, Mrs. Eddy goes on in the sixth subject and speaks about the theodicy of Christian Science, the theodicy of divine truth, which is the true judgment. A lot about this, about courts and juries and jurisdiction and judging and so on. And she shows how Christian Science reveals the true theodicy and judges rightly and has its declaration of independence. Well, Joel says the very same thing. He must have been a good friend of Mrs. Eddy, or vice versa. Because he goes on after that subject of life, he goes on and says, for behold, in those days I shall bring again the captivity of Judah. I will gather all nations in the valley of Jehoshaphat. And Jehoshaphat means the Lord will judge. You have the judgment. And I will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land, and they have cast lots for my people and have given a boy for an harlot, and have sold a girl for wine. Swiftly and speedily will I return your recompense upon your head. Mrs. Eddy writes in that paragraph, he said, whosoever uses these developmental powers is never safe. God will arrest him, divine justice will manacle him, his sins will be millstones about his neck, weighing him down to the depths of ignominy. And death. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. Swiftly and speedily will I return your recompense upon your own head. Let the nations, says Joel, bestir themselves and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the nations round about. For the Lord will be a refuge unto his people, and a stronghold to the children of Israel. Well, Mrs. Eddy says of this that God is really the stronghold of the people, because God has endowed men with inalienable rights. Man is properly self-governed when he is guided and governed by his Maker, divine truth and love. And Joel says, and there shall be no strangers pass through her anymore. And there shall be no strangers pass through her anymore. There shall be no more strange concept coming in, strangers. Mrs. Eddy says in that very subject, men's rights are invaded when the divine order is interfered with. Exactly the same. And lastly, we have in Mrs. Eddy's text the seventh subject, which shows that the fruits of spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. Joel says that the other equally. He says he gives also that plenteousness, that fullness of God. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down sweet wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the brooks of Judah shall flow with waters, and the fountain shall come forth of the house of the Lord. Wonderful. And then Joel goes on and says, but Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be desolate, a desolate wilderness, for the violence done to the children of Judah. Mrs. Eddy says, and the works of the flesh are manifest, and recounts them, and they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God, just as Edom and Egypt are desolate. Just the same. For the Lord dwelleth in Zion. And here you have Joel preaching 2,500 years before Mrs. Eddy, preaching what? He had to analyze the question, is there an evil power or is there not? If there is one being, how can I see that there are not two powers, an evil power like the locust and God, who is a good power? And he shows how one can resolve that sense of duality, the sense that there is something next to God. Animal magnetism can resolve that duality into the oneness of being. And that resolution is just going on within our own consciousness at the point where he says, and Mrs. Eddy says, mankind must learn that evil is no power. Where Joel says, and you must turn to God and find out if he is not good and mercy. And the moment Joel turns to God, then everything that seems to be have taken away by the locust, by the evil power, by animal magnetism, has been given back full and plenty. I must stop here.